What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 126 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Paulie Walnuts, and I'm joined here by my affable co-host, former market maker, 20 years and current day retail trader and educator, the man who can't help but attract coal miners' daughters, a bunch of gold diggers, the heartthrob of House Street. JJ, how's it going?
Ray, thanks so much. I'm an old man now.
That's
About
funny.
all those accolades.
That's funny. Hopefully you're staying awake, had a bunch of coffee over there in England. What, 11 o'clock now?
Well, it's fireworks night, so it's like the fireworks have been going for like 3 hours
Yeah.
up here in Liverpool. So yeah, can't sleep with that. So
Interesting. J
and I'm excited with our guest today too.
Me too, me
So.
too. And before I introduce our guest, JJ's in England over there. I'm sure most of the listeners know. JJ, just curious because we're recording this on election night. I imagine what's like the citizens in England? They following this or like what's the talk around there? I'm just curious.
Yeah, they're watching this like a soap opera, right? Their politics over here are a little their politics are kind of Monty Python-esque, but they're watching, my brothers and sisters in the States. They're just it's fascinating. It's because being detached from it, you see it. It's larger than life, It's the really big show, as Merv. As they used to say back in the day, it's something else. Well, I hope everything just goes well and everyone just gets along after.
Well, that's probably a slim to no chance, but we can wish for
Hey,
the best. Good
sending
vibes,
good vibes. I'm just sending good vibes.
good vibes, absolutely. Okay, and our guest today is a U.S. Investing Championship 2023 top performer with a gain of 103.5%. He's currently leading this year's 2024 competition with a whopping 409%. He's a fundamental and technical analyst, founder of Pristine Capital. I'm talking about Andrew O'Connell. Andrew, how's it going, man?
What's going on, guys? Thank you so much for having me. I'm pumped.
Awesome, man. We appreciate you coming on, man. And yeah, like I already mentioned, joining us here on Election Day. Sure, we probably got some drama on the horizon. Should be fun. Has this election season, Andrew, has it changed your market approach at all, or is it kind of just business as usual?
Yeah, it definitely has. Yeah, because what's kind of crazy, like I follow the seasonality pretty closely in the market. I have a nice template where I can look through the history of everything that's happened. And these election years do tend to be quite different. So it's kind of like, once every 4 years, you get like this curveball of a year where like I see a lot of people freaking out because the market is dipping ahead of the election, for example. But if you look at the seasonality, it's perfectly normal for the market to dip into the election. So I think there's things that could happen, like, a contested election, something like that. My base case is things hopefully go nice and smooth sailing. And if that's the case, then pretty much the dip ends here and we could have a nice Santa Claus rally. So it definitely factors into what I'm doing. Like I pay very close attention. I've been like a hawk on the betting markets, all that stuff. So yeah, it's really exciting. It's easy to get like caught going into the election. So that's really the main thing. Like I don't want to get like caught, on the wrong way on the market, whether it's long or short.
When you've looked at election years of past, maybe what are some similarities? Like what have you seen when you've looked in the past?
Yeah, so what's interesting is for this election year, we've been on it was like a 5 month win streak for the S&P 500. And then October, I was really like, okay, October tends to be a really weak seasonal month for the market in an election year. So I was very prepared to be just super defensive my portfolio. In the first 2 weeks of October, we had like crazy animal spirits going, and like there were like small cap stocks, ripping, like DJT ripping, like all these stocks just going crazy. So that was a little bit like unusual for an election sequence like this. But then that weakness caught up to the market in the second half of October. It happened really fast, where the market just lost all of its gains and then some. So what's interesting is like the market performed exactly as you would expect given the seasonality, but it happened in like a weird sequence intra-month, which is a little bit tricky. So now that we're in November, typically the seasonal pattern is the market kind of bottoms out around the election. And then as you get into November and December, then a lot of these big institutional fund managers, they're kind of just like thinking about the holidays, thinking about turkey, thinking about Christmas presents.
Bonus
And
time. Yeah.
yeah, exactly, bonus time. And in a good year in the market, like I think the S&P 500 is up, I think it's over 20% now for this year. When you have that kind of a tailwind, like on a year-to-date basis, and then you get through this big catalyst, like assuming nothing bad happens, because hey, maybe something bad does happen, who knows? That's not my base case. But if we can make it through this, then you kind of get to that good holiday season.
It's cool, man. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool how like what's the saying? It's like history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, I think. So it's like it's just cool. It's cool how these things work. And I guess that the market's always going to keep you on your toes. All right, so Andrew, so obviously I think a good starting point for our conversation, we just get some background knowledge on yourself. So if you don't mind, just tell us a little bit just I guess I realized when you wanted to be a trader, when you started, what gravitated you towards the market?
Yeah, so my beginning really as a little kid, I grew up with like older cousins, friends, like family all around me, and we always loved to compete. So it was like, who can run around the pool the fastest in the backyard, or like who can do this, who can make the most shots in basketball. And I was one of those kids, like a feral kid. I was always outside, dodgeball, football, whatever it was. And I always just loved competing. And I was really just like obsessed with games, whether it was like checkers, sports, like anything where you can play any sort of like strategy, trying to beat someone else. Like I was always just captivated by that. So I ended up playing tennis growing up. I got into it a little bit
Nice.
late when I was a teenager, and I ended up playing Division One tennis in college. And so from there, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try for the Pro Tour. Like this is gonna be awesome. And wasn't quite at that level to play pro tour tennis. So I went through a little period when I was maybe like 21 where I was kind of lost, where I was like, what's the next thing? Like, I want to have like some big goal I'm working towards. And at that time, I had majored in economics and finance in school. And I think it was kind of in my blood. My dad was an accounting major, he was a CPA. So I think some of that just kind of got into me. And yeah, I took a financial markets course. And as soon as I took that, and I realized, like, wow, the market is a meritocracy. Like, there's some people that are really good. There's some people that are terrible. Like, you can get paid off of how you perform. Once I found that, and then just like the potential for like unlimited learning, I was like, okay, this is it. My goal is to become one of the best traders in the world. So basically, at 21, I kind of like made that declaration, like, tennis was here. Boom. Now all that energy is going to transfer to the market. So I really made that switch then. And then really it was like, how do I get a job at one of these big companies, becoming a trader or an analyst, that sort of stuff. And one of my old tennis teammates, I was chatting with him. He had already graduated a couple of years prior. And he was like, Andy, you're coming from LaSalle University. It's a non-target school. If you want to at least get a look, you should start studying for the CFA exams. So at the time, like I didn't really know where to even learn about the markets. Like it was just, I want to learn, but I don't really know like the best info sources or anything like that. And I just started studying the CFA curriculum. So I learned a lot about fundamentals and business analysis. And then I just had a subscription to Wall Street Journal, a subscription to Bloomberg. And I just started trading the market pretty much like intuitively, just kind of creating my own style. And I was really just reading the news, reading Wall Street Journal, reading Bloomberg. I didn't know anything about technical analysis at the time, so I didn't even use charts. And I was just kind of trading around events, trading around news, layering in a little bit of fundamentals in there. And it was working pretty well for me. So I rattled off maybe like 4 or 5 years of just straight profitability, beating the market. And for me, I was like, dang, like I think I might have a natural knack for this. And at the same time I was doing that, I ended up clinching a job at Vanguard and huge asset manager, mutual fund company. So I started off there as a brokerage associate, and I was basically climbing from like the bottom step at that company. So I was talking to clients, helping them with their portfolios, that sort of thing. And I ended up working my way onto the equity trading desk, and then I got to work on the fixed income trading desk too. So that was huge for me. Like I had my Bloomberg set up, my four monitors. Like it was just, really cool. And yeah, I got to rotate through a bunch of the desks on the fixed income side and really learn about the bond market. So I absolutely love the bond market. I think it's so cool. I love treasuries and how they trade. And yeah, just really developed my own sort of strategy. It was maybe like 4 or 5 years into Vanguard, where I was really trying to get like that front office, big role. And I ended up applying for this program. It was the Investment Management Development Program. And it was basically like all Ivy League kids coming out of college, and then one internal hire. And there's like 10 or 20,000 people at Vanguard. So it was very, very competitive. And I was selected as the one internal hire for that program. So that was awesome for me. I was super stoked. And I was like, this is my fast track to being a portfolio manager or whatever at Vanguard. And I ended up getting kicked out of the program before it even started. So yeah, I just been trading my personal accounts. You're not really allowed to do that when you work in asset management. And I got kicked out of the program for a trade. I made like $22 in the trade, and I got kicked out.
Oh man.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you real quick. When you're at a firm, your account's probably at that firm, so they know you.
Yeah.
I was in the industry in the 90s, right? So the computerization, like they would know instantly that you were trading, and wouldn't they shut you down then and not, or give you a warning? That seems pretty
Yeah.
harsh.
It
But I don't know
was,
what the culture is like at Vanguard.
yeah, it was very weird with their system. Technically, they're trading almost every single stock in the market every single
Yeah,
day.
exactly.
So there's like a pretty crazy like pre-clearance process, and yeah, there was all these like weird technicalities where I was just young and I was just trying to trade and trying to learn, and that effectively got me kicked out of this program. So at the
Wow.
time, I was like super upset, and I was like,
Yeah, no
"Geez,
kidding. I mean, not even a warning. That's pretty harsh. That's harsh. That's a harsh compliance environment.
yeah, I think it's just tough. Like at all these firms, like it's so in counterintuitive because you would think if I want to learn trading, I should work at one of these big asset managers. But looking back, like for especially young people that are watching this, that's not always the right path. Like it can be good to get that experience and just kind of like see how it all works, but you really don't need that experience, and like it can actually, kind of hinder your trading. So
Exactly.
yeah, so I did that, ended up leaving Vanguard around that time because I was like, you know what, I'm doing very well in trading. Now is probably the perfect time to jump off and do it on my own. So I jumped off, did it on my own for a couple of years. Had huge setbacks as soon as I jumped off on my own. And it was pretty much like the entire psychology of my trading just totally changed when I went full time. Where part of the reason I was doing so well when I was working was I was kind of doing like position trading and like thematic trading. So I'd maybe place like, a couple of big trades a quarter, like, three, four, five trades. And that was really like my bread and butter. When I went full time, then I developed this mindset of like, I need consistent cash flow, like
Got it.
consistent cash flow. And I changed my trading style. I went full technical trading. I dropped the thematic stuff. I dropped the fundamentals. And I just tried to reinvent my whole system for full-time trading. It did
Wow.
not work. I blew up multiple times. And I faced like serious, serious downfall where like at one point I had to sell my car. At one point I was waiting tables at a restaurant. Like it got really, really dark.
Yep,
So
been there.
yeah, I just got so humbled by the market, and I ended up kind of putting my system back together. And I was like, you know what? The stuff I'm really good at is the thematic trading and the reading the news, understand the fundamentals. And then from there, I added in the technicals that I had learned. So now my strategy is very much a hybrid approach where I'm using the fundamentals, I'm using the news, and then I'm also using the technicals. And that's really just kind of like falling a million times. That's what led to the awesome result in the US Investing Championship last year, and then doing pretty good again this year.
Now, so when you were, having these struggles, were you just trading your own account or OPM? Were you trading other people's cash as well, or?
Yeah, so I was just trading my account, but
Okay.
it was
But
kind of
that's,
like the thing that can happen, and for anyone that's going full time in trading, this is sort of what happened to me, where you go full time and then you immediately enter a hole. And I think psychologically that's very tough when all of a sudden like your cash flow is gone, you have to pull from your account every month, and then you find yourself in a hole from the beginning. You can try to scratch yourself out too fast, which is what I did, and that kind of led to errors. So yeah, just crazy learning experiences. Like this game is just incredibly tough. It's a game of survival for sure.
Andrew, that's a great story, man. And I have like so many questions or just like comments on that. I like when you're saying about like transitioning full time, it makes me think of like when I first like transitioned to playing poker full time. And these things are tough because you don't get a consistent paycheck, but you strive to want to be consistent, but it's just not the nature of these things, and it messes with you so much psychologically, and then maybe you start pressing, you get outside of your system. I guess like how did you like when you eventually turned the corner? And then I want to even ask you about just like the humbling experiences, like that just had to be tough in itself. I'm sure all this was like what you needed to go through, but like I how do you deal with these things psychologically, or like what turned the corner for you think?
Yeah, so psychologically, you start to feel like, oh man, I was red on the market. Like I'm providing no value to society. Like on a net basis, I am red. I'm providing a negative benefit to society. So that is just like incredibly difficult to wrap your mind around, especially when, you've never really dealt with it before and you didn't really like expect it. So yeah, I kind of spiraled into like a depressed state, where like I noticed my brain started working differently. Problems that used to be very easy for me, and like thinking forward, that's one of the things that helps me in my trading. I'm able to kind of like think a little bit into the future and kind of focus on that stuff. I noticed I developed this like tunnel vision where like everything seemed very difficult. Like even just getting out of bed, getting dressed, like everything started getting difficult. And I think for me, it was like just hitting a rock bottom moment. And like what was weird for me was like I was like, oh man, this is rock bottom, like now only up from here. And then what I found out was like, no, there's a rock bottom below that and like a rock bottom below that.
Oh,
So yeah,
man.
it was challenging. And like I had a point, which is kind of crazy to even like admit, but I was like in my garage and I was like, geez, like I need some help, like I'm trying everything. And I just kind of put it out to the universe, like, just help me turn something around here. And I think what turned a corner for me was thinking about like all those years when I was doing well, like what was I actually doing? Like what was my strategy looking like? And I compared it to what I was doing now. And the thing is, like, I never used Twitter or social media before I went full time in trading. And I jumped onto social media when I went full time. So I was consuming a lot of like, just like trash content online around trading. And that messed with my psychology as well. So I kind of like took a little bit of a step back from some of that. And then I was like, okay, my strategy is around fundamentals, catalysts, the news, and the technicals. And honestly, trading big positions and not trading every day. Like I'm not a day trader. I really discovered within myself, like I'm a swing trader, I'm a position trader, I'm not a day trader. And it was really just like finding out, here's who I am as a trader, and I really gotta roll with what I do best.
Awesome, man. Well, I commend your perseverance. That's awesome, man. And I think that could be I mean, I think it's just inspiring to me. I think it could be inspiring to a lot of traders out there listening. And I like to think of like sometimes like going through those things, like, if I go through like difficult times or like things I've tried to tell myself, like, because I totally relate to you, like being like down and like you're like just in such a bad state you can't even think right. But you have sometimes like that's what you need to go through to get to the other side. And just, bad can be good. So I appreciate you sharing that. Andrew, you said something I don't think I've heard before from a trader. You say I think the word was thematic. You said trading. What could you explain to us what that is?
So, I've tried all these different disciplines in the market, like technicals, fundamentals, news. And kind of what I've come to understand is there's the technicals, which is what is actually happening in the market. What does the supply and demand look like? What's being bought currently? What's being sold currently? And you can get a fantastic roadmap of what everyone's thinking in the market at that given moment. But then beyond the technicals, there's the fundamentals, which is what are the actual numbers underpinning everything that's happening in the market? And then in addition to that, the news is really like what are the stories driving the market? Because I think what a lot of people get confused, especially fundamental people, is they think it's only the numbers driving the market.
Sure.
But really, a lot of times it is stories driving the market. So when I say thematic trading, really what I'm thinking about is trying to find stories that have some good fundamentals backing them, and then trying to trade them at times when the technicals are really kind of moving in the right direction. So it's really just kind of blending those things together.
Sure, I like that. I like that a lot. It makes a ton of sense. We just got to take a quick time out here to announce that our Micro Z Futures trading room is now offering 7-day free trial, no obligations, offering not only ES, where JJ teaches and trades, but other futures, instruments, stocks, crypto. And for my real degenerates, we got DFS and sports betting, which I am active in. Again, that's a 7-day free trial, no obligations or commitment. Come join us at microefutures.com. Andrew, just to kind of just talk a little bit about your process and like how you trade, and all the things relating. You said you're a position trader. What length of time are we usually looking at?
Yeah, so it really depends because what I'm doing is, like, for example, something like Alibaba. Alibaba has been the stock that I've been trading the most this year. And so for that, I kind of came into the year looking at the fundamentals. And I have like some Excel models I've built where like I can just punch in a ticker and I can just get like a quick, dirty snapshot of what things are looking like. So, like, I see, okay, these Chinese companies. I see they're really, really beaten down fundamentally. The valuations are pretty low, just incredibly low. And so from there, I'm looking at like what kind of stories are driving these. And I see that it's like, oh, China delisting, and like China's in a recession, and like it's never going to come out. And, all those kinds of things, which are very valid. And I think that's the reason why, they were so down in the dumps. So for something like that, the stocks were in huge downtrends and then they started to base sideways. So for something like that, I've been trading Alibaba. It really good fundamentals, really good cash flow, pays dividends, does share buybacks. For a ticker like that, that's something where I'm like, I think this thing might be bottoming. I could really latch on to this for maybe like 6 months to a year. Maybe hold a runner position, like even beyond that, if I get it where I really think it's the bottom. So for me, like Alibaba has been something where I've been trading in and out of it because I'm in this contest, but that's something where I've really been trading that stock for about a year now, like using call options, using common stock. And yeah, I think as I keep getting better at this and keep refining and keep getting older too, like I'm 31 years old right now. I would imagine like my hold times, like I really want my hold times to keep getting longer and longer. But yeah, something like Bitcoin as well. Like Bitcoin, I've been holding for maybe like 2 years now because I really think that one, from where I was buying it around like 25, 30,000, I was like, I'm gonna play this one for a move to 100K, and it might take me like 2 or 3 years, but I like the theme and I really think it has like a longer tail
Hopefully
to it.
soon. Hopefully
Yeah.
soon.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, maybe election night. We'll see.
I'm with you there. I've been holding Bitcoin for a while. And I plan to.
Yeah.
All right, so that's cool. So I guess it depends. I mean, well, what I mean, will you have trades that are a couple of days?
Yeah.
What determines the length of hold for you?
Yeah, so for me, and this is something I layered into my process, say like Alibaba, I'm like, okay, I've done all the analysis, all the stars are aligning. Now I'm actually going to put the trade on. I'm pretty much setting like a five, maybe like a 5 or 6% stop on most of my trades.
Okay.
And if I get stopped out, it could be like my best idea I've ever had, thinking about it in the shower and like, just going crazy over this thing. But if it hits my stop, I'm gone. Like I'm gone every time. So that's been
Nice.
one of the things that has helped me from having those big booms and busts,
Sure.
where now if my stop hits, it doesn't matter like what the idea is. I'm definitely going to keep trying it. So like I'll get stopped out and I'll keep trying and I'll look for the next spot. But really, when my hold times are short, it's because I got stopped out on the downside. And when my hold times are longer, it's like, oh man, I put it on and like it worked right away. And then like, I think it could still go and like, oh man, it's building on another base here. And like that's where like the trading gets like that's the fun part of trading when like, oh man, it's
Yeah,
like going my way. And
when
for
it's
those, like
good.
I'm trying to hold on for dear life as long as I can.
I like that. I like that a lot. So you are a trend trader, or you have some different strategies? How many different strategies you have?
Yeah, so I think my personality, naturally, I'm very contrarian. So like I think, most traders, they're either naturally like counter trend or trend reversal people, or they're trend following people. And like both are have their strengths and weaknesses. You can kill it in both. So I have a bunch of setups for trend reversals. So those are like my favorite when like a huge stock has just been in like a downtrend for so long. And then it starts just base sideways. And then I look and the fundamentals are really solid. And then like I see like, oh man, they just changed their management team. And like, they're trying to work on this turnaround. Like that's, I love trading those trend reversals. But then at the same time, for something like say like cryptocurrency, I've been in that really like in that group for a couple of years now. And I just believe so deeply in it that like for that group, I've been doing a lot of like continuation trades, like okay, like MicroStrategy, like it's risen a little bit higher, it's done like a short little base, and like I think crypto could take its next leg up, so like let me try this for continuation. So like I guess long story short, I trade trend reversals and I trade continuation setups. So it's kind of like sometimes it gets me in trouble where like I kind of do go the wrong way, but other times it works really well. So it's kind of like a hybrid.
Okay, nice. I like
Oh,
that.
that's cool.
You mentioned and I like it. I like what you're saying too, and I think it's a good mathematically sound about having your stop 5 to 6%, but then you hold on for dear life when you're right away, which is awesome. So are you adding at all to your winners? And then also on top, like, when is this a point where you're like, okay, the trend's over? I'm sure it might vary case to case, but I guess just speak on that.
Yeah, that's an awesome question, man. So that this concept that we're discussing right now, this has been the turning point for me. Because if you take your stop every time it hits, and then you just let your winning trades like go to maybe like 2 times what you risked, even if it doesn't go to 2 times, like if you got like 1.2, like you're still doing good, and it's gonna be so hard for you to not make money in trading if you just cut your loss every time, and then at least some of those you let go on the upside. So what I am doing primarily, especially when these trades kind of go my way, is usually I'm looking for ATR extensions from the 50-day simple moving average.
Okay.
So like one thing I've noticed, and Jeff Sun on Twitter really turned me on to this. He's awesome. If you look at the behavior of most stocks, typically, when they get about like 10 ATRs away from that 50-day simple moving average, every stock has a slightly different personality, but that's kind of like a good benchmark. When it starts getting up there, then the risk reward, like if you entered at a really nice, like tight consolidation area, then it goes to 10 ATRs extended from the 50 day. The risk reward kind of like skews out of your favor. So generally for those, like I'm trying to clip off some into strength. And then in terms of adding two positions, that's been the major thing that has really put me at the top of the contest this year. Because occasionally before I would add to losers. That is the only way to blow up in trading. Like, I don't think I've ever, if you talk to someone that has blown up in trading, I think 100% of the time it's they added to losers. So it's basically like if you stop doing that, then you eliminate the chance you're going to blow up. So on the opposite, if everyone blows up because they added to their losers, then it's like you flip that coin around and like what happens if you start adding to your winners? So that's what I started doing this year, like in Alibaba. And for technical traders, just think about the patterns that you trade. And usually there's low pivots where like maybe you're buying on a dip. And then usually there's higher pivots in these patterns too, where maybe the stock is breaking out or like about to break out. So what I've been doing with Alibaba is I was kind of buying in like the deep, really wide consolidation base. And then as the stock started to move in my favor, then we started forming like some continuation setups, like an ascending triangle or, just really nice tight price action. And I started adding to my position as we started seeing that. And again, I don't really think I would have been able to do that if I didn't understand the story and I didn't understand the fundamentals. For me personally, that's the only way I can really add to winners. Like I will never just trade like, oh, I've never even heard of this stock. It's just like four tickers, four letters on a screen. Like I'm doubling, tripling down on this. Like, so yeah, for that one, I was adding to my winner. And that's how you can get like a real like P&L explosion. If you do that, you add to your winning position and like boom, all of a sudden David Tepper comes out and he's telling everyone to buy China stocks. And like I was long Alibaba when that was happening. So I was
Nice.
selling into that
That strong.
sequence.
Awesome,
So
awesome.
that was a really nice move. Did you were you in that like when it was in that 70, $80 range? That's where you were when it was starting to clean up down there because they were cleaning up the float. And yeah, nice, beautiful. I was watching that too. Like I just trade ES, but that was a nice one where they're cleaning it up and hopefully, once they get it over that 122 level, then the inventory will be underneath us.
Yeah, so I was in that stock. I was trading it when it was in the 60s, like
Nice.
having rallies up to the 70s.
Got
Then
it.
I jumped back in the 70s and was adding to my position in the 80s. And so like for me, that trade was really like I thought the huge asymmetry was when that thing was like in the 60s and the 70s. And so once David Tepper came out and said his bit, for me, it was like I've already been in this trade. Like I've already ripped this thing for a winner like a few times this
Nice.
year. And then the thing just, when one of these big billionaires like says like, oh, I think this group is great, like everyone just goes for it. So into that strength, I was selling my position. I actually sold it a little bit early. I think I sold it in like the high 90s. I think it went like all the way up to like 110 or something like that,
120.
120.
Yeah, 120. It was a nice run. Really nice run on that, because I saw that thing come down from 300, and then they diluted it a bit as well, and so I was like, oh, I hope they clean it up. So yeah, it's nice that somebody caught that, just like Palantir. They took that puppy almost down to $5, and but it took a year to clean up the float, but once they did, boy, beautiful work. Nice,
And the
nice. I'm
crazy,
learning.
the crazy thing too is like if you can capture one of those, like in a trading year, like I was not in Palantir, so like anyone that was in that thing, like they just crushed it. Like if you have one Palantir and you're sized into that thing with like that's your high conviction trade. Like if you smash that thing in a trading year, like you just smash the whole year like in one trade. So that's how powerful this is. Like that's why in my strategy, I'm generally focusing on like 5 to 10 tickers a year where I'm like, okay, this one, like I'm really watching it. And like I really wanna like I'll be mad if this one goes and I'm not in it. But like beyond that, there's so many stocks out there moving, and like the reality is, like, I think people think they need to trade way more stocks than like they actually do in order to have those really big years.
Yeah.
True.
That's huge. I think like a lot of newcomers don't realize that, right? That like your money, maybe for like the month or the week or whatever the time frame is, can really come from like they come from a small amount of trades, where like everything else is maybe small win, small loss, or like something in between, and that you're looking to capitalize on like it's just a cool concept. But I guess it like kind of to the or earlier in the conversation, it kind of goes against like the grain of wanting to have consistency, I guess. Or what do you think?
Yeah, it total in order to be good at trading, all of your behaviors pretty much have to go against the grain of what our human nature is telling us we want to
Right,
do.
right.
So that's like the toughest thing. That's why 95% of people don't make it, because they're just thinking like a regular human. And it's like, for example, with another concept like Alibaba, smash the stock, a really good trade for me. I sold in the high 90s and the stock got all the way to 120 after I sold it. So another concept is like, you're always going to be like, man, I wish I had held that thing like another like couple days,
Yeah.
but there's no such thing as a perfect trade. So like, that's the thing. Either you're selling the stock too early and like, oh man, the stock just ripped another 20% without me. Or if you're waiting in it too long, then oh man, I was in it at the peak and like it dropped 10 or 20% and then I got out. So I think 95% of traders, when they're thinking about, man, the stock went up a lot, I'm in it, should I sell some? Their mind starts telling them, and this is same thing that happens in my mind too. You go, if I sell this thing, what happens if it keeps going up? Like I'm gonna feel like such an idiot. So like I have to stay in because like I want to get the last drop. But like the reality is, the odds of you getting like the top tick, like it's just never gonna happen. So like you kind of hope if you have a really good trade, most likely the trade is going higher after you exit, because like that means like it was a really good trade and a really powerful stock. But for most people, they just can't deal with that. So it's really just like these human emotions and biases that prevent us from making the really high quality decision. And you kind of just like go, you know, the human route, and that's where a lot of people get into trouble.
Yeah, well said, well said. JJ, I don't know if you remember when we had Denise Scholl on. She's you know, she talks with Trey. She's been doing it for a long time, and she really comes from like a neuroscience background and approach to it. And you know, I read her book and we had her on the podcast, and there is she said, and it like totally resonated with me, and it's helped big time that like you're never like most of the time in trading, like you're gonna feel like shit. Like you're not like it's not going to feel good. And like you mentioned, even when you win, you could still feel bad. Oh my God, the stock still ran another $20 on me or whatever. And yeah, you won, but you still don't feel great. Oh, look how much I left on a table or whatnot. And so like I think just coming from that place, like knowing, okay, I'm not always going to feel good, or like I don't know if it's just that the chasing of that feeling or what it is that people want, but it's just like I don't know. It's just, at least it's helped me big time. And it's just a great concept, and that's what I'm gonna talk to the people in the room tomorrow on like the psychology, JJ. Like, that's what I really try
Totally.
and hammer home to people is that like even
That's
on your
good.
good days, you might not be happy. You're probably still gonna be pissed.
I still remember in 2006, we did a deal and we made an insane amount of money in a week. And it was a Friday night, and you know, like the group had made about 20 million that week, and we just and I was just, you know, in this house by myself, and I was kind of like, yes, well, that's really cool, but I'm all alone in this house, and I'm kind of like the rush was gone, you know, and you're just kind of like looking at your cat going, okay, what's next? You know, it's
Yeah, now what?
like it's a bit of a downer, you know. It's like, yeah,
Yeah.
so yeah. Yeah,
I have that same thing, and like I work with traders as well. I notice this is very, very common where like, you know, it's like, oh man, I was in the stock, I hit it for a winner, but like dang it, it kept going up, or like that sort of thing. And at the end of the day, it's like if you're upset and depressed when you lose your trades, And then you're also upset and depressed when you win your trades. Like, trading just becomes like this miserable endeavor that, like, why would you ever do it? So, like, those thoughts, they enter my mind every time as well. Like, every time I exit, it goes further in my favor, like, whatever. So, it's impossible not to really have those thoughts.
For sure.
But I just try to, like, my macro hat, I just try to tell myself, like, any trade I do where I don't get, just crushed on this trade to the downside, that's like technically a good experience. And like, I have to let myself be happy on a winning trade. Like, I can't not, because I've had that before as well. Like what you were describing, JJ, where like I'll hit my biggest winning trade. And then afterwards, like I just feel this like adrenaline dump. And I'm like, dang, I'm depressed right now. Like
It's
it is
weird.
so weird.
And then you go, okay, and you talk to yourself and you're like, okay, idiot, like 5 years ago, you were struggling to pay rent, like shut up. But you still have that, it's like that adrenaline, the rush is gone,
The human mind is a fascinating
It
thing. It really
is.
is. And like I question why I do this sometimes. Like, why am I putting myself through this mental anguish, or like I have to fight against my own inclinations? But it's for the best, but
You get better over time.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
get well,
just
for sure. It
yeah.
gets
Yeah.
better over time.
It
But like you
does.
said, you still even feel you feel these things though too. But
Yeah.
yeah, man, it's interesting. Hey, what I wanted to ask you about catalysts. Are there specific maybe like what are some of your favorite catalysts? What specifically anything specific you're looking for?
Yeah, so for me, my favorite catalyst, I really like when there's like turnarounds in stocks. Like I really like to see like that long base happening when this after the stock has been in a downtrend. What I used to do, and this is kind of what got me in trouble, is you find a stock that's in a downtrend and you buy it when it's in the downtrend. And then most likely you're going to get eviscerated because trading with the trend is a positive edge. But you find those stocks that were in a downtrend in the past, and now they're going sideways and building at a nice base. And then from there, like I have a couple different news wires. I'm like a news junkie. I love just kind of reading what's going on. And yeah, you might have like an earnings catalyst coming up, and like you might have management teams that change. Like, man, this last CEO, he was garbage. Stock price dropped. We're bringing in, this shiny new CEO. And like this guy was, the head of these other companies that did really, really well, knows the space. He's coming in like he's the guy trying to turn the company around. When I see that, like I saw that in PayPal earlier this year. PayPal, the thing, good fundamentals, good cash flow, but no growth. They brought in a new CEO. He starts, all these news announcements start coming out. New initiative at PayPal, new like a fast lane checkout system. New partnerships, like all this stuff is changing. And then sometimes you get that earnings catalyst, the numbers start inflecting higher, and then those institutional buyers start coming in. So I love kind of like management changes, those sorts of catalysts. I also love scenarios like we have right now with the presidential election. Like everyone gets so worked up about the presidential election. And it's like, I need to have puts on the books. Like, I need to be hedged in my portfolio. What happens if, we don't know who the president is of the United States? Like, I can't be invested. And like, the reality is, like, if you're like a retail trader and you're not managing like a $10 billion endowment for like blah, 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 who needs the money? Like, you could be like, you know what? I'm going to sit through the election volatility because odds are things will be okay. So catalysts like that, I love trading as well, like those bigger picture catalysts.
Sure. Cool,
That's cool.
man. On the technical side, sure you're like using support resistance. Are you using like anything else like technical analysis wise?
Yeah, so I use the market profile. So I freaking love the market profile. I just think it's so simple, and it's really just showing like, hey, in addition, like you got your candlestick chart. This thing is just showing you like the levels at which the most volume went off in the stock.
It's
And it is,
beautiful.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Like, yeah, you can just see not every level is the same because there might be like a certain price level where, like, hey, we got to that price, but no one actually traded at that level. So, like, that's not really
Exactly.
important. Yeah.
I
So,
mean,
I
it's
like,
beautiful. It's so quick to see cost basis too. You know, you can
yes.
see accumulation cost basis and then the distribution. And then when we put it back on sale and drop price back to cost basis, it really helps you stay out of bad trades too, you know, as a method. It's, yeah, I just, I'm so grateful I found it, you know,
Yeah. Yeah, so
back
that's
when I
probably
did.
like your bread and butter. Like, yeah, exactly what you were mentioning. Like being able to see, like, hey, when the price gets to this level, most of the people that bought the stock are probably underwater. Like, even just, I think sometimes people take technicals a little bit too like serious. Where like, oh
Sure.
man, like if it hits this level, like that means the stock has to do X, Y, Z, or like
Yeah.
has to do that. I think that's where people can get things a little bit
In
twisted.
trouble. Yeah.
But if you're just like, hey, this level's probably a little bit more important than the others, I'm going to watch how the market interacts around that level. I know if we break below it, there's probably people that are underwater. Like, that's it's an advantage so that you can use it and benefit from it.
That's really cool. And you use it on equities too, right? So that's it's such a it really pulls back the it's almost like I don't know if you guys know what DTC sheets are, but market profile is kind of like pulling back the, you know, SPR, security position report, or DTC sheet, and you can see where people are positioned, you know, which is really cool.
Yeah, so I like using market profile, and then I just have like some simple moving averages on my chart. What I find more and more recently is like sometimes I like looking at the market with all of my indicators on, and then other times I just go with a naked chart. I remove all my indicators, and I also like throughout the day I'm toggling, like I turn all my indicators off and on, because I think there's advantages too when you just see like something about a chart that has no indicators on it that also
Sorry.
looks like very just like elegant. Like it's just there. You know, there's nothing crowding it. Like you can just see everything happening. So I kind of toggle.
And you can see so much from just a simple candle chart with nothing. It if you know, if you're paying attention, right? That's really cool. I mean, it's very exciting to talk to you. Sorry, Ray, I'm jumping in a lot.
No, feel
Yeah,
free. Obviously, no, I'm really enjoying this conversation too. This
I'm
is
learning
awesome.
too. It's cool.
Yeah, no, because I like it too. It is. There's something different when you just like it's like almost like I don't know, turning the noise off, and you just maybe you see things a little bit different too. It's I like that as well. As far as your sizing, maybe I shouldn't assume, but I assume like you have different sizings maybe based on setups or conditions. You just want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so sizing is very, very important. And sizing, like, I get so many people that ask me, like, give me all your position sizing on all of your trades. And what I always preface with is, like, everyone's going to have different sizing because everyone has different goals in their trading. Some people are super wealthy trading, you know, $1 billion. Some people are trading $10,000. And I really think it depends, like, if you're in the stage where you're like, I want to build my wealth and get rich. You're going to trade your sizes differently than if you're like, I'm already rich and my goal is to really just like do a trading business, not lose my shirt, like hold on to my wealth. For me, given that I'm a competitive contest trader and like I'm in it to win it, for me, I size very, very aggressively. My goal is I don't want to place too many trades, but in my best trades where I think like the fundamentals are aligning, the technicals are aligning, the news is aligning. For that, like I'll go as big as like 25% of my account in one trade. And that for me, I've gone bigger than that in the past. Like I've gone to like 50, I've gone like full cowboy. But I find when I do like 20 to 25, it's still very, very meaningful. And I find I don't like mess up the trades. Because I think for everyone, like if you're watching this and you're thinking about position sizing, the ideal size, I think for most people is you want to size at a level where when you crush the trade and you win it, you go, man, I wish I just had like a little bit more on it. That I think is like the perfect size because if you go too big, which 99% of traders are going too big, what you'll find is like I notice a lot of people, you're in a trade looking for a 100% move to the upside. You enter the trade, At the end of the day, the stock is down 1% from where you entered, and you're freaking out. And your stop is, 5% lower, but you're still freaking out. If you're finding that's the case, that is where you are sizing too big. You need to go smaller and finding that comfort level. So for me, like contest trading, even though I want to be very aggressive, I find like that 20 to 25% mark for me, because my psychological makeup, I can really handle a lot of risk. I have a high risk appetite that works very well for me.
Nice. And I think you mentioned before that stop might be like 5 to 6%. How is that? How'd you land on that number specifically?
Yeah, so I just find like for me, I'm going with like the technicals, fundamentals, like all these different elements. But what I find is like I'm trying to interact with the stock at like that ideal perfect level. And it's very similar to when I used to play tennis. When you're playing tennis, you want your contact point to be basically right in front of you in the same spot every time. And basically every athletic endeavor, like you want to make contact at a certain spot. There's specific areas you interact. Most people that are trading, they're interacting with stocks at really any level, and it doesn't matter. When I get that entry point where I'm like, I just bought this thing right at the pivot, I usually have in my mind like a 5 or 6% stop. But if it goes down like 2 or 3%, if I bought it at the right spot and it doesn't go, usually I'm taking it off even before it hits that 5 or 6% stop. So like the 5 or 6 is usually like that's like my actual like line in the sand. But like I'll be maneuvering, like retrying the trade, a lot sooner than that usually.
Okay, cool. I
Yeah.
was
Oh.
you bring up tennis, man. I've been I venture a little bit into the sports, gambling DFS space, and I've been like trying to get my buddy because I'm not I watch tennis like when it's on, and I'm like,
Yeah.
man, like if I knew like we gotta like model this out so I could start betting on this because I feel like betting on tennis would be awesome, man. Because like just one on one,
Oh,
just
yeah.
seems a lot of fun, man. That's awesome, man. When you first mentioned tennis, in the beginning, and you're talking about just like growing up and being competitive, and like, I related too, because I think that's why I like the market or like poker and like these other things, because it gives you that like competitive outlet, that drive. And I'm not necessarily even sure where it comes from. It's just like I'm just like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But is that maybe like a reason? Like, because that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Going into this investing competition, this championship, that was one of my questions. Like, why even do it?
Yeah, for me, it's really to prove to myself that I can do it. Like, for me, it's like, hey, I built a system that I think is viable. I think it's a robust system. It's working really well for me. And I want to put it to the test, and I want to have that accountability. And I want to get those upside rewards. Like if I'm killing it in the contest, like that's very beneficial to me. So like it's really like I want to do this at the highest level. Like I want to be the best. I want to show that I'm the best. Like that's really what it's all about. And like for me, my mindset is like even coming into this year, my goal was, okay, last year you got 9th place, try to go for a top 10 finish again and like just try to do that and be consistent. And like my goal is I'm 31 years old. I want to build like a really nice like 20-year track record of just like doing well. It doesn't have to be like the best, but just like doing well more often than not. And this is really just like a good way that I can track my performance. So like, yeah, this year, who knows who's going to win or whatever, but I'm going to be in the contest again next year. So like, I can't wait to just look
Nice.
back like
Nice.
10 years, 20 years from now and just be like, I was just competing this whole time, like doing this stuff.
That's
Okay, so let
awesome.
me ask this. So let me ask this. Okay, now this is a great buildup, and it's also great marketing for you, because you know what I'm saying next, OPM, right? Yeah.
Now that's the next step, right? Is that something that interests you? I mean, you are an FRM, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you've got the letters behind your name and the track record. So obvious next step is, start your own fund. So is there any you see that in your future at all? Is that sort of something you're looking for?
Yeah, that's one of my goals. So yeah, goal would be keep doing this contest for maybe the next like 3, 4, or 5 years, and just like keep building the system. Like what I found is, like when I first went full time, it was really just like out of happenstance. Things didn't work out so well for me at Vanguard. I kind of scrambled to put things together. My results weren't good coming out of the gate. For me now, it's like try to build something that's sustainable. Try to really get going for a couple of years, and I want to be very patient with it. So like now I have people that are like, "Oh man, shut up and take my money," like that sort of thing. But for me, it's like I just want to be patient. Right now I have a Substack, so like I share my research, share my trades, and like that's awesome. Like I really enjoy doing that. So yeah, down the road, 3, 5 years from now, still crushing it, then maybe. I want to have the option though. That's the thing. I want to have the option.
Okay, cool. And did you find that the FRM helped you at all? I mean, we don't really talk to a lot of risk managers. So do you find that helpful in your day-to-day operations?
I think learning the curriculum and kind of like a lot of the math behind some of these risk metrics definitely helps. I think for the retail trader, I would say it's not necessary
No, but I mean for what
because,
where you are.
yeah, most of what I've learned about risk management is it really is like you have your high level portfolio risk management, or like maybe if the market doesn't look good based on your system, you might want to cut positions. And then you also have your risk management on the position level. So like if any one of my positions hits a certain downside level, I'm out. So I think for like a retail trader, those are like really like high level risk management and then individual position risk management. And you can get by with just that. But I think as you get more into like the institutional world, that's where a lot of those deeper concepts come into play.
That's cool because we don't really get to talk to a lot of risk managers, and I'm a big risk guy, so
Yeah.
it's interesting to get that perspective.
Yeah, and I think for me too, it's like as you keep trading and as you keep advancing, if you're doing well, odds are your account is growing over time and like as you're getting older. So like originally my thought was like I want to do pure technical trading now because that's like all the rage and I see people on Twitter and blah blah blah. But like as you start to get bigger and bigger, you want to have strategies that can actually scale at higher levels. So like I don't even think I'm really at the level right now where like the FRM, all those concepts are coming into play. But maybe 5, 10 years from now,
Got
maybe
it.
they really are.
Makes total sense. Andrew, just for those listening, I mean, even for myself, for the investing championship, what are the rules, criteria, for the competition?
Yeah, so there's a couple different divisions in the competition. So there's like a money manager division if you're managing $1 million+, and then there's a lower division if you're managing 20K plus. And then within those two brackets, there is a group where you can only trade common stock, and then there's a group where you can trade common stock and options. So right now I'm in the 20K minimum buy-in group where you can trade stocks and options, because options are a pretty big part of my strategy as well. And then the goal is next year move up to stock and options, but move up to that money manager division.
Okay, cool. Cool. I guess psychologically, how has it does it add more pressure to you? I mean, I'm sure you're probably used to it by now, and maybe even this whole year because you have a year under your belt of doing it. But I guess how was it for that? Was it more pressure packed for you, or what do you think?
Yeah, so I found like naturally I perform better when I'm behind. Like I noticed same thing in tennis. I would usually drop the first set, play it much better in the second set. So I technically find like being in the underdog spot works well for me. So it is a little different when you find yourself like, oh man, I'm in first place now. And like there's a whole nother quarter to go. That's the thing, because a lot of people they're like, oh man, like you won this thing, like it's already done. And I'm like, no, it's not done. So I think for me, I've become like more neurotic where it's like, this is not done. Like we're still on the mission. So yeah, it is a little bit different. Definitely a little bit more pressure, but honestly, it's like, you just gotta deal with it. I mean, most people online, like they're just no pressure, no showing any results. Like can't see their wins and losses, like nothing. It's a lot harder when people can see when you're
Oh,
winning
for
or
sure.
losing. Like, it's a lot harder, but the rewards, if you do well, are a lot bigger too. So I
For
kind of
sure.
take, you got to take both.
Andrew, so with you leading now, going, because, I guess it's like a little bit different because it's not just, oh, you're just trading your account. Like, you're in a competition, right? Like, so you're going into the last quarter here. If I saw correctly, I mean, I don't have the numbers up in front of me, but like, you got a decent size lead. I mean, I think over 100% for sure. I think, but probably more. Are you going to play like a little bit more maybe defensive, or it's just going to be business as usual? You're not worried too much like of that angle.
Yeah, I think it's BAU. I think it's really like, what does the setup look like? And like, if the setup looks good, it looks good. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But yeah, definitely, it definitely changes like as you are up bigger because, like for example, like if I make, let's say in 1 month I make a 5% return, because my account has compounded so much, a 5% return on the month on my year to date is like a 20% return. And then same thing, if I draw down. I draw down 5%, that's like I'm actually drawing down 20. So it does kind of change things a little bit. But yeah, I think the most important thing is just like tune it out and just keep going. Like what I keep telling myself is like it doesn't matter if you win, just do your best, put up a good number. But then my lizard brain is like, I really wanna win. So it's juggling both.
For
Yeah.
sure. Yeah. Cause I think from like a game theory perspective, cause it's like, I don't want to say like you could just sit on the lead here, but I mean, you very well like could potentially, cause I think that you would have won last year, like with the number, and obviously market's different. We don't know what's going to happen. So it could definitely
Yeah.
drastically change. People could go on heaters or favorable
Yeah.
conditions. You never know. But, yeah, just, I don't know. It's just my game theory mind going to
Yeah.
work there.
No, you're right. I thought about the same exact thing, and I think like a lot of the best traders and investors, they really think about these things very deeply because that's the thing about this business. Like if you're having a stellar year, you really can be like, "You know what? I'm taking off the next 2 months." I'm like, that's it for me. And like, it was great, guys. Like, that's it. Or you can keep on going. So that's kind of like the choice that we all have every day of like, you know, is it
You're
worth
but
it? Is it
you're a
not?
competitor. I don't know if I see you
Yeah, I'm not.
sitting on a lead or like that's just not your style, and which
No.
not my style neither. I'm like, nah,
Yeah.
man, I'm gonna get in the arena and play. That's cool, man. So has your would you trade a little bit different? I mean, being in the competition, does that change anything for you? Like, are you apt to be a little more aggressive, or the like?
It definitely does. And that's an amazing question because the best way to describe it is like you're kind of pushing your limits. Like we are all trying to risk, you know, as much as we can while getting in and out clean. So you're trying to put yourself in that position where, like, hey, with my position sizing, I need this to be meaningful and like I want to get good results, but then you don't want to get like full cowboy either. So like what naturally happens is like I think say if you're not competing or like say you're just very rich. If you're very rich, you could be like I'm going to have an awesome strategy and like my goal is minimizing drawdowns and like my thing is like I want to compound my money and like what I'm really focused on is like my risk adjusted returns and maybe they get like a 15% return in a year. And like you might think like yeah but this other guy got like 400% return but like in order to do that you have to be putting yourself psychologically in positions where you feel a little bit uncomfortable you are always kind of sitting on the edge of your seat that sort of thing so it is more stress that you add when you're trying to like really compete versus like you could just dial down all your risks still have awesome years and just never kind of put yourself in like that strained position.
Exactly. So was anything you learned from last year competing that you transferred over to this year?
Yeah, last year I was still adding to losers. So like I was still, you know, get fall in love with an idea, like whatever it was, and I would just add to that position a couple times. Sometimes it worked well. We're like, oh yeah, I got out at break even. And then other times you just take a bigger loss. So That's the thing. This year, I haven't done that. So I eliminated that from my playbook. And it just really helped. And then adding to winning trades, like I had never done that before. So, like, this is really my first year, like, layering that into my game. So I really just think with the trading, it really is if you just take your stop every time, boom, you're out. And then for those winners, you kind of like play with them a little bit more. Like, it's, you're never going to blow up. You're always going to be okay. You're going to lose sometimes, but like even your drawdowns will be small. You only blow up if you add to losers. So it's like you can't do that. So that's what I've learned. Like, just never add to a loser. Like, just don't do it.
Love it. You must have made a big jump recently, because like I was like looking at the results. Like I don't know if they get posted every so often, and I don't know. I wanted to say you were like in the 200s plus percent, and then like you jumped up to four. Like, was it one big trade, two big trades? Like just tell us what like the big jump. It came like what, in a couple weeks or so?
Yeah. So that's the crazy thing. When you enter that heater and it's like, oh shoot, things are working really well and like your account's moving, that is just like the best part of trading. And it's like you really got to enjoy those moments because they don't come around very often. So for me, that was, I was fully positioned into Alibaba. And then in September, that news came out about their stimulus program and then David Tepper. And I was just so in position for that, my monthly return was pretty high that month, but it's also due to the compounding. Like once you're up in like the hundreds of percent, any little move, like it just gets amplified so much. So that's a big part of like the compounding math. Like, yeah, if you, yeah, it's pretty powerful on the upside and the downside.
Gotcha. So yeah, so a big part was to the compounding as well. Awesome,
Yeah.
man. Awesome, man. Well, we're rooting for you, man. Good luck,
Thank
man.
you.
JJ, this guy, he's a silent killer, man. I could see like
I'm.
he comes across soft-spoken,
Hey,
intelligent guy, but man, underneath that,
listen.
this guy's an animal. I know it. I see it.
Listen, this, I'm getting, trying to get on his good side so when he does open a fund, he gives me a job. So, I'll just be that old guy, when you break glass in case of emergencies. Just keep me on there. I'll
Remember us, Andrew. No, that's
Yeah,
hey, that's
exactly.
no, that's cool, man. Andrew, I'm gonna let you get going here, man. I've really been enjoying the conversation. It's been awesome. You still play tennis at all?
Yeah, so I stopped for a couple of years and I picked it back up recently and I'm absolutely loving it, man. Now I play mostly doubles. I used to play singles and yeah, doubles has been so fun. Yeah, so now I play mostly on the weekends and I got like a new racket and yeah, it's like it's heaven when I'm out there, man. So it's so great.
That's awesome, man.
It's
I
so
like
cool.
I'm not good at all.
Oh.
Mess around, play with some people, but I just love the agility work. It's good, like a little workout, and it's fun, man. It's like, I'm similar to you, man. I like the competition. I like that one-on-one. Like that's awesome, man. Also, I before I forget, I wanted to ask you, 'cause you started late, you said, playing tennis, correct?
Yeah, I started when I was 14. I had a gym teacher that was like, I need some extra people. Like, would you want to join the team? And I had never even thought of tennis. So, yeah, I jumped in at 14 and yeah, just was learning on the fly. So, I was like doing tournaments and like playing with people that have been playing since they were like three.
That's
And like, I
crazy.
was really learning how to hit all the shots while like,
Oh,
trying to
amazing.
compete. So,
That's crazy. You
it
went
was fun.
D1 and then you went D1.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome, man. Good for you, man. Good for you. But all right, so with that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this, please rate and review it. If you'd like to join a supportive and professional trading room, please join us at microfutures.com. Andrew, I forgot to ask you this too. Why don't you tell the listeners about Pristine Capital, what you got going on there?
Yeah, so feel free to follow me at pristinecapital.substack.com. Pretty much what I'm doing is my nightly research. I'm putting in a research note every night, sending it out to subscribers, all the trades I'm doing for the competition, posting those as well. So yeah, feel free to follow me there.
Go check them out, people. JJ, parting words.
Oh, Andrew, thank you. It's a pleasure speaking to you. It's really, really cool to see. Young guys just killing it. Love to see it. And thanks because, we can always learn something, You can always teach an old dog, new tricks. And we look forward to having you back on. I'd also love to have you. You have a standing invitation to come into our trading room at any time. I think you'll
Oh,
be
that'd be
very
awesome.
inspiring to the folks in there. I think you're an inspiration. And hey, I just can't, I just can't wait till you start your fund. And one of these days, I'll be reading about you in the journal. And hey, I remember that guy. Remember we had him on our podcast. Now he's one of the top fund managers, and I can see it. It's beautiful.
Thank you so
Thank
much,
you.
guys. Yeah, this has been an awesome experience. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, looking forward to chatting again.
For sure, we're gonna have you back on when you win, when he's 2024 champion.
Nice,
So
definitely.
for Andrew O'Connell, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the gorilla of House Street. You stop, though.